Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON. We're your original social media. The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Jump back into the conversation. I wanted to ask, you also have great experience when it comes to how to heal any relationship with love. There's some information that you do have. I wanted you to share with the audience as far as anyone listening who may be in a relationship and may want to try to heal the relationship. Maybe they're not working with anyone. Maybe they're just working on it themselves. How would you speak to that particular couple as far as healing their relationship?
Okay, well, one thing about healing a relationship, first off, in order for a relationship to be great, it's got to be a fit. And if it's not a fit, there's not much you can do to make it be a fit. But there's a lot of times you can have a relationship that really is a fit, but it doesn't feel like it. Because there's so much junk, there's so much hurt in the way. So the thing that's important in a relationship is not staying together. What's important is to end the conflict, heal the hurt, and restore the love, not as husband and wife or boyfriend or girlfriend, but just one human being to another. Because when you put the focus on the love, one human being to another, everything else takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. And if the relationship is a fit, you come back together like magnets. And if it's not a fit, you go your separate ways. So one of the things that's so, so important in a relationship is you got to be willing to lose a relationship. Because the more you need a relationship, the more you're going to sabotage it.
Now, I want you to dig a little bit deeper into that. When you say the more that you need a relationship, the more you sabotage it. Can you dig a little bit deeper into that?
Sure. See, in reality, we don't need anything for our happiness because happiness can only come from within. But we think we need things for our happiness. That sense of need is actually the symptom of this deeper hurt. So, for example, if somebody needs to be a success, they're running from the hurt of failure. If somebody needs to be right, they're running from the hurt of that they're wrong, more specifically, stupid. And if somebody needs a loving relationship, they're running from the hurt of not worth loving. And what happens is that the automatic avoidance of this hurt forces us to act destructively, which then brings to us the very thing we're avoiding. So if I've got the hurt of not worth loving, I'm going to constantly be getting upset because of how the other person's treating me. I'll tend to hang on in some way or another, act destructively, which pushes the person away, which brings to me more of the hurt that I'm avoiding.
I just kind of want to interject a little bit because what you're saying is very true. And what you're saying is things that I want to put this in a way and just use hypothetical different names, fictitious names. And so what you're saying is true because I've watched, and sometimes I don't, when someone is close to you, it's hard to stop them, or it's hard to shake them. For instance, when you say when a person is constantly trying to run to love, or they're trying to run away from the hurt, someone that's constantly bouncing around from one person to the next person, and it's almost like they're on a mission. I'll just say their name is Jane. Jane is on this mission. She's on a mission that come hell or high water, she's going to find somebody and she's going to get married no matter what it takes. And you watch this person go through the cycle and the cycle and the cycle and the cycle, but you just can't jump in. I can't jump in and stop that person because they're not my client. They're not working with me. And it gets kind of sticky, and it gets a little difficult to jump in and say anything to that person. And you know that what they're doing is a little bit destructive. You know, what would you say to that individual? What would you say if that person is listening? What would you say to help the person to stop the behavior and kind of step back and take a look at what they're doing? How do you get that person to step back and take a look at what they're doing?
Well, the person's got to be willing to look. And not everybody's willing to look. Mm-hmm. But there are some people where they start noticing that, hey, I have a pattern here. Well, if you've ever got a pattern, there's some internal programming that's causing the pattern. So sometimes people will see, oh, I recognize a pattern here, and I want to heal it. Well, all destructive behavior comes from hurt. So one of the first steps in healing a relationship, one of the first steps in removing the destructive patterns, one of the first steps in creating a great life is you got to heal the hurt. And one of the first steps is you got to find what the hurt is. And you can look at your upsets to see what the hurt is. It's like, you know, if you keep getting upset on account of, if somebody has a fear of rejection, well, they're going to keep getting rejected over and over again. Well, look at your upsets. And then go to the hurt that's underneath each upset, and then ask yourself, according to the emotion, what does that say about me? Look at your fears. If your fears came true, what is the hurt you'd have to feel? What is the hurt that you felt as a little child? You know, what do you need for your happiness? And look for the opposite. And what you'll see as you start looking at these things, you start seeing it's the same hurt keeps repeating itself over and over and over again. And that's the hurt that needs to be healed. Now, the second step is to make peace with that part of you. See, there's nothing you can do to get rid of this hurt, because everything we do to get rid of it, everything we do to avoid it, to run from it, to push it away, gives it more power. You cannot get rid of worthless or not worth loving. But what you can do is you can take away its relevance and be so what about it. Yeah, worthless, that's part of me. So what? I'm also worthy. They're both there. So what? It's in the so what you get your freedom. And there's another element in this, and this is something, Adrian, that you talked about earlier, and it's about the hurt, the feeling of the hurt. We were created with the natural ability to release hurt and release it quickly. And the way to see how the body does that is to look at little kids. Little kids are masters at releasing hurt. And the thing that little kids do that's so powerful is they feel their hurt willingly. They're totally willing to feel their hurt, and they could care less what anybody thinks about it. It's in the feeling the hurt willingly, like a child, allows the hurt to come, run its course, and go. Mm-hmm. See, whenever we're upset, when we're full of fear, there's all this emotion that's being triggered and put in our face. Our job is to get it out of us. And the key to doing that is feeling that hurt willingly like a child.
You know, I want to stop right there for one moment. I do want to, Bill, I want to bring in Garnet. He's on hold. He's calling in from Minnesota. I do want to bring him into the discussion, into the conversation, and he has some really nice, interesting information to contribute to the conversation, if that's okay with you. I would love to bring him on right now. Garnet?
Great.
Garnet, are you there? Garnet? Hi, Garnet.
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hey, it's Garrett, by the way.
Garrett, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. Hi, okay. Garrett. Hey, Bill. All right. How's everyone doing?
Awesome. We're awesome. We're talking about past hurts, but I do kind of want to switch gears just a little bit. I want to switch up just a little bit. I don't know why I'm calling you Garnet. It's Garrett. So I'm going to get this
okay.
Right. And so I do kind of want to bring you into the discussion because your area is a little bit different. You talk about social anxiety. And I want to dig into social anxiety just in case if anyone's listening that experiences social anxiety. Sometimes we can be the ball of the party and then still have social anxiety. So I do want you to take a moment. I should have introduced you a little bit more. I was talking earlier. So those who were listening earlier, I was introducing the guests before they actually showed up. But that's okay. I want him to just jump in and talk about social anxiety. How do an individual overcome social anxiety so that they can meet someone? And social anxiety is such a problem for a lot of Americans in the U.S., maybe outside of the U.S., but how do they overcome social anxiety to meet someone? Because it can be paralyzing in a way. Anxiety can be paralyzing if they have it to that degree. And so how does an individual overcome social anxiety to help them to start a dialogue, a conversation with someone and meet an individual?
Well, it starts with just understanding the nature of social anxiety. And usually that's stemming from a fear of rejection. And a lot of people think it's from seeking acceptance. But as far as I can tell, there's not really even such a thing as acceptance except for if it comes from yourself. So most people that have social anxiety are running around checking to see if they've been rejected yet by other people. So the very first step to handling that is something I call 100% juice or 100% self-acceptance. So just deciding once and for all, essentially dropping any opinion about yourself entirely, and then accepting everything that's ever happened and everything that you've ever done and everything that you might ever do 100%, and then moving forward from there. And it doesn't sound like the world's most profound tool or anything, but with the people I've worked with on this, it has immediate effects, and they end up noticing right away when their mind starts slipping into self-judgment or any kind of self-evaluation. And the moment they notice it, they immediately raise that up to 100%. So rather than being unconscious, sleepwalking through life, and then suddenly feeling bad and feeling afraid, and then not even, you know, noticing when it actually happened, they notice it start to happen immediately. And then the mind actually has a tool it can use, first to identify that, and then second to actually shore it up. And then in that acceptance, the situation is much, much easier to deal with. So that's really the first step, probably toward handling almost anything in life, is 100% self-acceptance.
You know, I like the way that you explained 100% juice, and the way that I think of it. When you said 100% juice, the first thing that popped up for me was being your authentic self. When you be your authentic self, you're accepting yourself the way that you are. And you really don't, you know, give a flying hoot what anyone else thinks about how you are. You're expressing who you are in the universe the way God created you, and you're just being your authentic self, and it really doesn't matter what anyone else is thinking, you know, because everybody's going to think something about a person. You know, if I wear my hair green one day and blue the next, who gives a damn? You know, it's just the way I'm being authentic, and that's what I love. If I shave the back of my head, you know, I'm just being authentic. I'm being who I am. If I decide to walk down the street with, you know, designs on the left and curls on the right, that's my business. I'm being authentic. I'm being who I am, and I'm accepting myself. And, you know, when you do that, the most interesting and the most amazing thing happens. When you learn how to accept yourself and really be authentic, the most wonderful people show up in your life. You have the most wonderful people, the most wonderful friends, not only relationships. You meet some of the most amazing beings on the planet. You meet some of the most amazing people that contributes and add to your life. So the best way to add to your life is to be the juice, you know, to be the juice in your own life, to be the spice, you know, just to be the zing. You know, I just
totally
love to say it that way, because when you do, it's just my experience, when you do that, you meet individuals that add to you. They not only add to you, they connect with you, they align with you, and then the most amazing experience happens, and it just makes life so much more richer and so much more fulfilling when you do that. And so I think it's a way that every human being should live their life. If you don't, you're cheating yourself. And so you don't want to cheat yourself. Don't cheat yourself. Just be who you are. Learn to love who you are and be authentic. Don't cheat yourself. Life is just too damn short to be cheating yourself. And that's the gospel. That's the gospel according to Fierce. Don't cheat yourself. Life is too damn short. And so I want you to jump back in and share with us a little bit more about social anxiety. And you said it's really the fear of rejection. That was really interesting.
Yeah, and it can never, you know, you can never stop trying to find out if everyone has rejected you or not. And so if someone's on the bus and they're having a mean look on their face, and then the person is making that about them, you know, oh, that must be about me. And they're interpreting everything as if it's about them and being rejected in some negative way. And that's tied up with like a survival threat. So that's why they feel it so intensely. Even though it's not a survival threat, you know, it might have been if we were in some tribal situation where if you got rejected by the group, you're going to just suffer and die in the woods. But currently that's not going to happen, but the body doesn't know that. So we're having the same kind of chemical reaction that we would have if we were being rejected by the tribe. So knowing that even makes it easier too, and you can just kind of laugh it off. And you know, at the end of the day, when you're laying down to go to sleep at night, even if everyone accepted you all day long, you still end up with no more than you had at the beginning of the day. So acceptance isn't even really a substance. There's nothing there. It's an illusion. So, if you accept yourself completely, you know that, and then there's nothing else left to accept. Nobody has to accept you at all. It doesn't matter. And the thing that you mentioned that's interesting is most people are actually lost in thoughts about what other people might be thinking about them, or else fear of the future and you know, regret of the past. So it's absurd to even worry about what anyone else is thinking, especially when most people are kind of living like UFOs, just floating around thinking about other people's thoughts. I mean, it's absurd. So, and like you said, if you come out of that sleepwalking haze, then you'll notice when there's other people who are also conscious and present around, and they will instantly be sort of magnetized to you, and you'll be drawn to them. And without having to seek anybody, without having neediness and trying to chase people down, that's a big mistake most people make who are single and they want to meet someone, is they're going after people, chasing after people. They end up finding sort of the weakest examples of people who will accept that kind of desperation. Mm-hmm. So it's a sad thing, all of that. The second step, though, really, of overcoming social anxiety is called nothing to live up to. So just not realizing that there is no official standard of your behavior, of your looks, as you mentioned, of your hair, of your clothes, of anything. You don't have to live up really to anything except for what you choose.
And most people just don't realize it. They're trying to live up to their parents and their teachers and some imagined societal standard, but it just doesn't exist.
You know, I want you to, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit because I want to have you to touch on another point before we go to break. So we have a few moments before we do go to break. There was one point I want you to bring out about chronic tension and how chronic tension attracts the wrong people in our lives. And so I think that one important thing is to stop attracting the wrong people so you can start attracting the right people. So I wanted you to kind of touch on that a little bit before we go to break, how chronic tension attracts the wrong person. So how does that work?
Well, so if you have an example, like we'll just use the face now, but imagine this applies to the whole body. If your face is looking a little bit sad and a little bit weak, and anyone can do that in the mirror and see what that looks like, and then that's going to be teaching everyone else around you who sees you how to treat you and what's going on for you. So if your face is looking a little bit sad and weak, then the people there's going to be people who are repelled by that, generally successful people and people who are feeling really excited or happy about life. Aren't going to be drawn to that, except maybe to help or in a sense of pity. And that's facial tension that's expressing that. And the only way that we end up having chronic tensions in the body, unless it's some injury or something, is through the illusions in the mind, which you could also call mental suffering. So if you're suffering in the mind, then you're also tensing up the body. Otherwise, if the body relaxes, then the mental suffering also goes away. It can't maintain one without the other. So then if that mental suffering is happening, it's putting tension in the body. That tension in the body is communicating exactly how you're feeling and what's going on for you to everyone else around, even if they don't notice it consciously. So it will repel some people and it will attract other people. So, for example, even getting a job or something, if they feel like this is some pitiful person, then they're not going to hire that person. And the way to overcoming that, strangely enough, is not through dealing with all the mental stuff, because, as you can see, people go to therapy for 15 or 20 years, or they end up on psychiatric medication, and nothing ever really changes. But it's through dealing with the physical tensions in the body, and it has a tendency to erase the mental suffering. And that's something I do in my work very often with people. It's just dealing with the body tension. So, I mean, one way people could try it out right away is to just do really slow stretching of all the muscles in the face with loads of intensity. So just moving and stretching while you're breathing. You can do that for like 5 minutes every morning. And it's remarkable how much it will change your life and change your perception.
Mm. We're going to talk about that a little bit more right after the break. And then also I want you to talk about, the thought just escaped me. We was going to talk about chronic tension, body language. Because when you said something earlier, I remember working at the university and things of that nature, how we had to take classes with body language. And I wanted to ask you and think about this after the break, we'll come back. How do body language tie into that tension, and how can we use body language as far as learning how to relax our body? Because I think it's really important, and I know that it's true that body language has a lot to do with what we're signaling to another individual. And so I want you to take a moment to think about that, and then after we come back from the break, we'll discuss body language and how it ties into tension and what signals that we may be signaling to other individuals and without even knowing it through our body language. And so we're going to go to break and we'll come back and talk about body language and tension. You're listening to the Fierce Female Network. I am your host. This is Fierce. We are talking with Bill Ferguson and Garrett Dunn. They're on the line. We're going to jump back into the discussion and the conversation talking about body language and tension. Bill? Garrett?
Yep, I'm here.
Oh, great, wonderful. And so I just wanted to jump back in. Before the break, we were talking about body language and tension. And so I wanted you to kind of jump in a little bit and give your opinion, what you thought about body language and how it expresses to another person, whether if they're even approachable, because a lot of times body language says a lot. If you're in public and if your body language, if you're an open person, you'll do things with your body to let another person know that you're approachable. They'll come up to you. They'll speak and say hello. Well, with me, I always give myself as an example. Even on other programs, I always say, well, for example, with me in the public, I'm always the person that's a social butterfly. No matter where, if I'm getting in somebody's car, no matter if I'm in the grocery store, they always tell me, if someone's with me, they always tell me, could you kind of, you know, tone it down a little bit, because I'm always the loud person. I'm always going to start a conversation. I don't know any strangers. That's just how I am. I don't know any strangers. But if I meet someone and their body language is just like total shutdown mode, I feel it's my mission in life to get this person to open up, even though I know it's not my mission. But I just feel like it's my duty to help this person to smile and to get a smile on their face. That's just how I am. That's just my example of how I am to change the atmosphere. I just love to change the atmosphere. That's just my thing. And so, with body language, what are your points? What do you feel about body language and intention?
Well, again, like anything that's going on in the mind, well, there's a saying, some old, you know, cliched saying that an ugly face hides an ugly mind. Sounds kind of nasty to say that, but in a sense, what that saying is getting at is about whatever's going on the inside is being expressed. Whatever's going on in the mind is being expressed in the body and on the face. So no matter how superficially beautiful or handsome a person is, whatever that stuff going on in their mind, whatever kind of negative or misery going on in their mind is going to be projected out through their body and their face. So body language is fascinating. And again, most people are completely unaware of it, even though they're reacting to it constantly. We receive all that information from each other, but most people, again, like I said before, living in this land of ideas and words and unaware of it. But as soon as you become aware of it, like you just described, you can see what's going on for a person. This, you can imagine, would be super helpful in intimate relationship, to actually be present and aware to what's going on for your partner and then be available to make changes to it. Yeah, and you can see when people are extremely defensive, they're closed down, the shoulders are rolled forward. Usually their butt and legs are squeezed tight. The shoulders are forward and up a little bit as well. Neck is tense. All kinds of things are going on. And there are ways to deal with that. There's some exercises I have people do where you pace around the room worried, acting like all worried and saying, oh my God, what's going to happen to me? And really get into the sense of worry and do it with the body. And then alternate that for about 5 minutes total with getting super excited and jumping up and down and saying, yes, I love it, all right, and getting really excited. And doing both of those, alternating between those, seems to just level everything out. And it actually creates a new sort of body language expression. And then from then on, you're never completely unaware of what the body's doing. I had a workshop over the summer. I had everyone tell a story from their life, and I noticed people were looking down and not really engaging. And I said, come on now, act as if you're extremely excited to tell this story and look and push the story through your eyes and into the eyes of the other people around you. And suddenly this group of people who might have said, oh, I'm not a storyteller, I don't really do this, was fully animated, and they were moving their arms around and their chests opened up and their face was all excited looking. So just making it aware and taking a small step will have massive, massive results in terms of body language. So you can do a ton of things with the body that would be impossible with the mind. Does that make sense?
It does. Yes, it does.
So mind is a confused mess, you know, for most people. But if you deal with the body, it's just plain and simple.
You know, I'm going to introduce another question. It kind of feels like we segued a little bit into talking about psychology for some reason or another. I just kind of felt that. But I do have one other question. How do you destroy, I want you to give your input as far as how do you destroy your programmed personality, which is an interesting question. I'm not going to dissect it. That's just my little bad habit. I dissect everything. But programmed personality. First of all, I want you to explain programmed personality. We have, so you're saying we have programmed personalities, or?
Yeah, we have a habitual way of thinking of ourselves.
Okay.
And that determines the boundaries of our behavior.
Okay.
And the reason I say programmed is because it's habitual and repetitive.
Okay.
So it's not authentic. It's not spontaneous.
Okay.
And it's so predictable.
It's predictable. So how will we destroy our programmed personality?
Well, like I've been saying up to now, is through destroying the chronic tensions that are holding it in place.
Okay.
So when you're essentially setting the body free to be able to be present and live in life however it wants to live. Now, of course, there's some restrictions in society and everything, but really, there's a lot less restrictions on what is possible for a human, how it's possible for a human to live than what we allow ourselves. So a lot of people think that they have to stay at a certain level of job, stay at a certain level of relationship with other people, stay at a certain level of feeling good or feeling bad. So yeah, you destroy that, first of all, by becoming aware of it. And you could even make a list of what are the programmed ways you have of operating that seem outside of your control. And then just by writing those down, you'll become aware of them, and they'll become sort of intolerable. Did you see the movie I Heart Huckabees? I don't know, it might be 15 years old now.
I Heart, yes.
I Heart Huckabees, yeah. It's a great depiction of how the program personality operates, and then and also how people start to break free from it, which can be a really fun process.
You know, I wanted you to speak a little bit as well. I know that one of your topics that you enjoy speaking on as far as relationships, how do individuals break free from having that victim mentality? Because that's another door, I call them, shutting the door and closing the door. When you have that type of mentality, you're shutting the door mentally. And so how do individuals, those that's listening in, how do they stop? I know it takes a while and it takes a process to work through it and to work on it, but how do individuals quickly destroy that mentality of feeling like they're a victim? So how do they break that down?
One interesting way to do that is to write, spend a week or so, a little bit every day, write in the voice of that inner victim. So every time you notice that this blaming, complaining, whining going on inside, or doing it out loud, even worse, but make a list of, write in the voice of that inner victim. And for most people, that alone already starts to get them feeling totally different. And you'll see how ridiculous these notions are that the mind is coming up with. And then you look at that list and say out loud everything on it. Really, really say it out loud and feel what it's saying. And that alone will start to de-victimize you. And then a second component is just to remember to take 100% responsibility for everything in your life, even if it seems outside of your control, but to take 100% responsibility for everything that's going on. And that gives the mind something to actually work with. Say, I'm responsible for this situation. Now what can I do about it? And then suddenly you're becoming aware of all these possibilities and action steps and behaviors instead of making a list of who to blame and what's wrong and why you can't do, you know, why you can't do something. Really, to say it really briefly, the easiest way to get over the feeling like a victim is to end all neediness in your life. So if you have needs, then go satisfy them for yourself. Don't be projecting them onto everyone else and then be done with it. Ending the neediness is also how you're going to attract a lot better people into your life, whereas neediness will repel everyone good.
You know, that's interesting, because I was just about to get to that next point, because we've talked about destroying feeling like a victim. We've talked about body language. We've talked about chronic tension. And this all has to do with, I know it sounds like maybe pieces of a puzzle that we're discussing different topic and subjects, but we're still discussing relationships. So I want everyone that's listening in to know we're still talking about relationships, because these are all very important components. These are all important components. So if you think about a puzzle, just think about a puzzle of a map, you know, and you have all these little pieces. But in order to have that puzzle put all together, the end goal is to have the puzzle put all together, and it's, you'll see the whole map. And so the point is, in relationships, you have all these different components, and you have to work on all the different components. So the point is, we're still talking about relationships, but we're talking about different pieces of what we need to work on. And so I wanted to segue into a little bit. You started to talk about how to attract the right people into a life of relationships, business or work, love. And so how do we make that transition when we're making a transition? I call them transitions, and we're pivoting. We're taking a dip. We're going to turn. I like shifting. I like getting people to shift, because when you shift, that means you're turning from the left to the right. You're turning from something negative to something positive. You're turning from a point of not enough, and you're turning to abundance. So I love the shift. There's just something we do in the business. We just love to get people to shift their thinking and the way that, so we're going from one point to the next. And so what I'm getting at, I want you to talk a little bit more about attracting the right type of people in our lives for business, love, relationships, and work. And so how do those that's listening in, how do they learn how to start attracting those right people into their life? They maybe want to start a business, and maybe they need to, and this can be worked out not only in love relationships. This is for the whole person. You attract different people in your life that you may say that you want to start a business and you need a client, or you need this type of tool and you don't have it, and there's a way you can attract this into your life. Okay, you can practice doing this, but I want you to give out that information. How do they start attracting those right elements and those right components into their life to get them to the next point of greatness?
So yeah, well, the first step in attracting the right people into your life is to stop looking for people. So again, just segues perfectly from the ending the neediness. But a lot of people are out seeking partners, seeking. I guess it's different with the job, because you kind of have to go seek that out. But in general, the idea is to stop trying to chase other people down and find a partner. And then from there, to raise your own standards for yourself. So raising your own standards for yourself means instantly you're going to stop tolerating a lot of the crap that people you shouldn't be around are going to be doing. You're going to stop attracting low-level people by raising your own standards for yourself. And then also, you're going to be accepting better behavior from yourself. And then from there, I usually have people go out and start to take classes. So if they've always wanted to be a painter, okay, then take some painting classes. If you've always wanted to learn to write better, you want to write a book, go just join a writer's circle. So you're getting yourself out of the bar scene and out of sort of the pickup kind of situations and putting yourself into situations that you probably didn't even know existed before. So you want to learn how to do woodworking, go take a woodworking class. There's so many cool things in life that you can go out and learn how to do, or to go out and experience, or go visit the parks in your town. You know, go to improve your life in all the different ways that you've been putting off. And in the process of improving your life, you're going to meet and come in contact with other people who are doing the same in the same way that you are. So you'll meet other painters, you'll meet other woodworkers, you'll meet other whatever it is. And then the same can go for the jobs. Apply for jobs a little bit above what you're used to that are going to take more effort from you and demand more of you. Or in business, another way is to raise your prices and become the person who can command a higher level of pay. It might sound superficial, but in raising your rates, you're going to be attracting better customers who will get better results from what you do. You can imagine if there was a baseball coach who charges $10 an hour to train you, there's going to be no high-level clients going to that guy. But if there's a baseball coach that says, oh, yeah, well, I charge $100,000 a day, but you're going to be the best baseball player by the end of 2 days, you know, that's going to attract a certain level of people. So those are the three ways I would go about it, and you can anyone can start that immediately.
You know, and I agree with you. When you were talking about attracting different people, I had to, again, I always like to say that I use myself for an example. I just like to be the naked truth. And so what I used to do, because I went from one type of person to a second type of person, and so you were talking about low-level people. And so when you were talking about low-level people, of course, I thought about, at one point in my life, the low-level people, the people or the men that brought me the potato chips. I call them the potato chips. They would bring me potato chips. And so I stopped, you know, allowing the potato chip bringers in my life, and I started allowing the chocolate cherry candies to come into my life. And so I let go of the potato chips because the potato chip just kind of represented much of nothing, really. And then I started accepting the chocolate-covered cherries in my life, which, of course, represented something sweet, something juicy, something delicious. And so that's the way I think about it. And really, I did have individuals that brought me potato chips. They didn't have anything to bring me. They would bring me back potato chips. As crazy as that may sound, it's really the truth. It's the goddamn truth. And I do have another guest that's going to be coming on, Mr. Elliot Katz. He's going to share some things with us momentarily. And so I do want to, if it's anything that you wanted to sum up, you can go right ahead and sum up any information that you have for our listeners that may want to take baby steps. When you were talking about different classes, which is really great, and it really does work if you have an interest in classes or maybe men woodworking or dancing. I love dancing. And so that's a great one. If you want to learn how to do the tango, take a tango class. If you want to learn how to do the salsa, you know, you go out and take a class to learn how to do something. Me, it's food. I love great food. And so with me, I would take a tasting of different foods or a cooking class, learn how to cook something that I don't know how to cook, some type of cuisine. And so for individuals that need to take baby steps, what's the one thing that they can do to take little baby steps to kind of get their feet wet just a little bit with meeting and attracting different individuals?
Well, like I said, one thing that ties everything we talked about together is presence and awareness of what's going on in the body. So even just anything you could do, and dancing is a great start because, you have to become aware of the body and the habitual ways that it's moving, and then you start changing it in order to dance with any level of freedom or capacity. So, yeah, just awareness, being aware of what's going on in the body and what's going on with other people in their body, and you can start to become just fascinated with that. looking at what's going on in other people's faces and really listening to other people instead of thinking about what other people are thinking about, because you'll just never know, and it's usually garbage anyway. So, but being present, then you become aware of just the beauty, the simple beauty and joy of existence without any needs and without having to add anything to it. So from there, I think just becoming excited about life itself will then start to change everything else. It'll attract all different kinds of people. And like you said before, it'll attract people who really contribute to your life and who it feels really exciting and fun to know. Instead of, if you complain a lot, you're going to attract people who also complain a lot, and then you see what how that's going to go.
Well, I really do want to thank you for joining in discussion and conversation on tonight. I really do appreciate your time. It's been a great discussion, a great conversation. I really do appreciate all the information that you gave to the listeners. I do appreciate it, and I really hope that they took some notes and they'll be able to reflect back. I believe in reflecting back on notes so that it can help you get to the next point. It's because what we're going to do is connect all the dots. So we're going somewhere on the journey, and so you'll have that information to connect all the dots. And I do have another caller that's on hold, Mr. Elliott. And so if you want to continue the conversation with me, Garrett, that'd be wonderful. But I want to say hello to Elliott right now. Elliott Katz?
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome. I know it's quite early for you, so I do appreciate you calling in and being a part of a discussion on tonight. And so you have some great information that you're going to share with our listeners about the male persuasion, and I know they cannot wait to hear about it. And you're going to share with us how you coach different individuals, men who are single, and they say they want to get married. And so we're going to get into the whole dynamic of finding out what's that all about with single men that say they want to get married. And I know some people like that. So when you share that information, I'm going to be all ears. I'm going to be tuned in. I'm going to be listening. And so we're going to get into that right after the break. And so I do want you to share a little bit of your background, Elliott, before we get into that topic of discussion, before we go to break. Elliott?
Absolutely. I'm ready.
Yes, share a little bit of your background with the listening audience, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about why men who want to get married still single. And so we're going to talk about that.
Well, I can tell you about my background. I like a lot of men, I heard all these messages we hear today. And when I was married, I thought I was married for 10 years, and then I got divorced. And, you know, I heard all these messages we hear today about, you know, don't be controlling, don't be, you know, we hear all this about toxic masculinity. So I thought I was being the nicest guy by just, you know, going along with whatever my wife wanted. And, you know, after 10 years of marriage, I got divorced. And like a lot of people, I blamed her for everything. Then I asked myself, what do I have to learn from all this? So it really set me off on a journey to learn, what does it mean to be a man in a relationship? Like, what is it that women really want in a man that they want to be married to? And the more I talk to other men, and we're all kind of confused because we all think we're being nice guys and we're trying our best to please our wives, and it doesn't seem to be working. And then I started reading books, and then I really looked to the timeless wisdom that for generations, you know, fathers used to teach their sons about being a man and in a relationship with a woman who wants to be with that man. And really, what I learned is really blew me away, because it coincided with what I heard women complain is lacking in men today. They don't show leadership. They don't make decisions. They don't take the responsibility. You know, I heard your earlier guest talking about taking responsibility. Really, a woman wants a man who takes responsibility. I couldn't count the number of single women who will say to me, you know, a man asked me out on a date, and then he couldn't even choose a place for a cup of coffee. He wanted me to plan a whole day. Well, to that, that's a big turnoff, because it makes her wonder, well, if I marry this man, how's he going to handle the challenges of being married when he can't even choose a place for a cup of coffee? But men think, oh, I'm being the nicest guy. I'm showing her I'm not controlling. So it's all these messages that men have heard, thinking, well, this should make a woman happy, but it's not making them happy. They're not married because, you know, they want to get married, but women are not interested in men who can't, you know, make a decision about anything. I mean, we're not talking about controlling tyrants. We're talking about the other extreme, where wherever there's a decision, the man says, oh, whatever you want, you decide. It's a big turnoff. A guy can't make any decisions, can't show his share of leadership. That's what I learned from my experience. That's what led to this, to writing this book and going out and coaching men.
You know, and I know that your book was translated in 24 different languages, which is really exciting. And so we are going to take a break. I want our listeners to know that we are you're listening to the Fierce Female Network. I'm your host, Fierce. And this is WVON. This is 1690 AM. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more with Elliot. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into why single men who want to get married are still single. And we're going to find out some answers from Mr. Elliot. And right now we're going to take a break.